Welcome back for another episode of the Unscripted Small Business Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Abby Crane, and I am so thrilled to introduce today's guest, Mario Wiesa. Mario is a social communication expert with a passion for helping individuals and organizations improve their communication skills. As a researcher, author, and public speaker, he has dedicated over 17 years to studying intrapersonal, interpersonal, and group communication. But beyond his research and expertise, Mario is just one of those rare, incredible human beings with so much compassion and heart to give. To date, this has been one of my absolute favorite episodes, and I'm so excited for you to hear his insights into what makes someone an effective communicator and how external communication starts with the ways in which we communicate with ourselves. I'm telling you, there are so many incredible insights in this conversation. You're going to want to stick around until the end. Let's get started. Mario, I'm so thrilled that you're in the studio today. Thank you so much for being here.
I am more than stoked to be here right now. Really excited and looking forward to the engagement and conversation.
Mario, tell us a little bit about your background. I know that you specialize in communication, and this is a topic that I'm super excited for listeners to learn more about because communication is so important when it comes to anything business related. But just tell us a little bit about how you got started with this background and what kind of inspired you to become a master of communication.
Thank you for this question. And as I'm listening to your question, I'm thinking about all the experiences I've gone through and how I made it here so far. And that's why I write books, because it's a really long path. So originally, I was born and raised in Egypt, Cairo, Egypt. And I was born to a mother who was like a really business woman, even though she did not even go to high school, but she was really good with money, numbers, networking with people, dealing with people. So she was a really good salesperson. And my dad, who was actually a Coptic Christian monk for about 20 years before he got married to my mother. So he was like a Holy Spirit kind of man, you know. When people mention Jesus Christ, I think about my dad. My dad is my Jesus Christ. He's such a very compassionate, kind man. So I have this like two, I'm not going to say polar opposite. They complement each other, but I had this one side for my mom was like, you know, material world and grow and business and achieve. And my dad was like, life is great. Everything is all right. Be kind to yourself and everyone else. So I had this too, which is a blessing. From really young age also, I realized, something was missing, Abby. The dynamics and the communication between my family members and my friends in school or the gym when I used to practice karate at a really young age. I always wondered. I think we all humans are born with the curiosity mindset. It just gets dampened down with time, you know. So I do my very best to maintain my curiosity, and I have been searching for a while. Until about 20 years ago, I came across this one book, The Power of Your Subconscious Mind by Joseph Murphy. It's a really popular book. It sold like, I don't know, over 7 million in the last like 30 years. And this was a like, palm-sized book. You can actually finish reading it like one day if you want to. For me, because I was new to English as a second language, it took me about a week to read. And I read this book about half a dozen times in the last like 10 years or so, or since then, I should say. And one of the things I realized that the first 7 years of our lives determines almost 90% of our future, how we were programmed before subconsciously. This is like scientifically proven, and many doctors agree on that because the language, even just learning to walk on 2 feet, just because we're programmed that way. Mm-hmm. So, after reading this book, I really started my search intentionally, unconsciously. Okay, this book was one step forward, but I still like feel like something is missing. Even when I was in relationships, I remember when I was in relationship and like I'm upset with my partner or my partner is upset with me. I used to say like, I used to say like, why do we have such a strong feeling? I love you. Why can't I just like hug you? Why can't we just like move forward? I feel like something is holding me back. Like what? Like whiskey tango foxtrot. Like what's going on? Why can't I just do something about these emotions? So I served in the U.S. Navy, and after being honorably discharged, I started to really dive deeper into my research. So I went back to school and I started to university, college. I started studying really different subjects to just figure out what this thing that might be missing, what is it? So I studied business, accounting, psychology, sociology, anthropology. I even studied dinosaurs. I'm trying to figure out what is this thing missing until I landed on communication. And the biggest light bulb came on for me. I knew this was it, and I started researching it, interviewing people, interviewing professors, doctors, my friends. I even interviewed my mom before she passed away. I'm like, I'm taking this communication skills like all the way to the moon and back, if you want to say it. And I'm not sure if you've heard this before. Some people, they say, once you find your it, there's no turning back. I heard this over 20 years ago, and I always wonder, like, what does that mean? Can someone explain that to me? Some things cannot be explained or expressed. It has to be experienced. And that was really it for me. Communication, empowering communication, intentional and mindful communication with self and other people in one-on-one setting or a group setting, and also one-in-one setting when we are with ourselves. That's another different type of communication.
I love everything that you just mentioned, especially that piece about communication and how it's so important in everything that we do, especially when you're talking. What came to mind was one of my favorite researchers, Brené Brown, and how she talks about human connection and how important that is. Thinking about communication and connection, where do they kind of intersect?
Starts with ourselves. So the moment you mentioned Brené Brown, my eyes light up because she's one of my favorite beings that exists. And one of her books, The Power of Vulnerability, that was given to me by ex-girlfriend mom. That was a subtle message there, like, dude, you need to open up a little bit, okay? I know you're a man, but open up a little bit. It really changed me. That was really like 13, 14 years ago. So please allow me to start by mentioning the three type of communication, and every other type of communication falls under those three. The first one is what you and I are having right now, which is titled interpersonal communication. Interpersonal, I-N-T-E-R. 101. We're also familiar with group communication, which is three people or more, hundreds, thousands, millions, still group communication. Obviously, it breaks down into organizational communication, hierarchy communication, strategic communication. The list goes on and on. Now, the third, which is my favorite. Why would I have a favorite? I don't know. I just feel like I have a favorite. And it's more than like 50% of my research is intrapersonal communication. I-N-T-R-A. Intrapersonal communication, how we converse with ourselves. And I found that this is the bedrock of all the other communications that we have. For example, I love your question. When it comes to communication and connection, where does it start? How do they intersect or they interact or cross over? If I am looking to create a connection with someone else, relationship outside of me, it will be so much easier if I have a happy, relaxed, and fun connection with my own self. What I mean by that is, when I wake up in the morning, what do I tell myself? Throughout the day, when I make a mistake, what do I tell myself? Do I like forgive myself or go, just a human, it's not a big deal, I buy another one? Or if I do something simple, but something really good, progress, do I celebrate this? Do I look in the mirror and go like, dude, you're a kick-ass. You had an amazing podcast. You had a great day. It sounds crazy, but you know what? When I used to hear this stuff 20 years ago, I used to think it's crazy. Again, That's why experience trumps just theory, just an idea. You have to experience it for yourself. At the end of the day, before you go to sleep, do you tell yourself, oh God, tomorrow is another day? Or you tell yourself, I cannot wait for tomorrow. It only gets better every single day. Whatever I'm going to do will be fun. When I wake up in the morning, like one of the first things that I say after I make my cup of tea and honey and lemon and light incense and candle and say with myself for like 15, 20 minutes, I actually thank the universe for waking me up this morning. Thank you for waking me up this morning. Scientifically speaking, every 24 hours around the globe, about 150,000 people do not make it to the next day.
Oh.
It's a heartbreaking statistics. It's fact. And every single time we make it cross over to another 24 hours, we are not one of the 150,000 people. So what I'm bringing up here is gratitude. When we connect with ourselves authentically, mindfully, and in a grateful way, it's basically this becomes the vessel that we can use to connect with other people. It will not be that challenging for me to be kind, empathetic, patient, grateful for my connection with other people because I already cultivate this with myself. I'm sure you've heard the saying, you can sell from an empty wagon. We cannot sell from empty wagon. It's true. So having this connection with ourselves, it has a huge ripple effect of all the other relationships that we have at home, at work, at the gym, even at the grocery store. So, yeah. So it all starts with self.
It all starts with the self. That is so powerful. What advice would you give to somebody that maybe they feel really disconnected from themselves? How do we start to get back in touch with that inner part?
Okay, let's start with the basics. I do not give advices. I'm no one to give advice. To be clear, if I have an advice, I better take it myself because people who give advices, they don't use it themselves. I know it's a joke, but it's really true and I'm guilty of it. Yet I have ideas. And it's up to the listeners to pay attention and take this information or not. First, because this is actually what I experienced myself. You know, if you think about your language that you grew up with, the culture you grew up with, and your way of interpreting the world, you were not born with that. This has been programmed within us. What I'm trying to get to here is our circle truly influences us. I'm sure you've heard that some people say we are, what is it? The sum average of the closest five people closest to us or something like that. That's really true. So I'm really grateful as I'm really sharing this from my heart. I came a long way. I used to really struggle with like negative voice, inner negative voice and acceptance in some ways. And it took few relationships and few friends and different circumstances to like show me something different. Like, you know, some people say if you meet someone who don't know how to love themselves, we keep loving them until they learn to love themselves. Mm-hmm. That sounds like a lot of work, but it does work. It really does work. So being selective about the influence that we have from the outside is really, really crucial. Number two, there are actually 3 points. Number two, I'm sure you heard of affirmation, positive affirmation. I think I need to write a book about this because it really did change my life. Honestly, when I started like 15 years ago with positive affirmation, listening to them on YouTube or just repeating them, at the beginning, I felt kind of silly. Like, oh, it is that. I feel kind of silly to say those things. But the tricky part that people don't know is maybe it doesn't impact you right away, but our ears are listening to what we are saying. And once we go to sleep, our subconscious mind kicks in. Number three, which I do pretty much on a daily basis, sometimes once in the evening, sometimes once in the evening, one in the morning, cultivating a quality time with self. I think I just mentioned to you like my cup of tea with honey and lemon, some incense and candle this morning sounds like really romantic time with myself. Yes, I deserve romantic time with myself. I deserve to love myself. Are you kidding me? This is the one relationship that's going to stay with me until my last breath. Yes. So being aware of the outside influence, spending quality time with self, and be very mindful, deliberate, and intentional about how we communicate with ourselves. Hence, positive affirmation. When things do not go my way, do I say, oh shit, it never works out? Or do I say, okay, this is a challenge. How am I going to figure my way around it? I don't have ideas now. Ideas will come up for me later. Let me work on something else and get back to this later. Like, really talking to self. As I'm saying this, this is really amazing. Talking to self like a near and dear precious friend, you know, that's very powerful. And I think that has a huge ripple effect on how we think, how we behave, how we speak, and how we connect with others. How we even show up to just show up, as Brené Brown says, you know? Yeah.
How do you feel like negative self-talk impacts the way that we outwardly communicate with other people?
Absolutely. So from my research, I found out that not only my research, other people, but only myself, that we give from what we have. So it is nearly impossible, I can tell you right now, to find someone who is kind, compassionate, assertive, and clear about how they talk with other people and being empathetic, and they are not doing that with themselves. If we're being more understanding and empathetic with ourselves, it's easier for us to do this with other people. Most people who are like very kind and gentle, they actually practice that with themselves. If you have a boss or manager who just like going off at you or just like angry and criticizing or do not see the good in what you're doing, up here is a war for them. And actually that teaches me to be more compassionate with them, because actually I was there before. I torture some of my past relationships because I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I was not aware. They were being so good to me and I was like, I'm not even aware. I'm like, I don't deserve this. You're treating me too good. I don't like this. I literally said that. Just like, I don't deserve it. Things have changed eventually. So I like that you bring this up because it just came up. It's not intentionally. My first book, okay? The title is Empowering Communication Unleashed. But the subtitle is The Most Powerful Voice You Will Ever Hear Is Your Own. Mm. What that means is if I have few people around me, and they're telling me something nice about me, and it's true, and I am refusing to take this in, I will not take it in. You can tell me I'm amazing as much as you want to. If I'm refusing to take this in, I'll always say, no, I don't deserve it. No, that doesn't work for me. You're being too nice. What do you want from me? Why are you being so nice to me? Those kind of like thoughts. But eventually, when we take time to reflect and go like, you know what, she said something is nice about me, and he treated me really nice, and they actually give me some good feedback about myself. Take time to reflect on that, to be more kind and connected with oneself, you know? And let's be frank. Most people who struggle with that are men, because we're supposed to be macho. We're all going to die, dude. Just chill.
You said a word that I want to go back to because I think it's a very important one. Yes. You mentioned empathy.
Yes.
What is your definition of empathy? And do you think that empathy is something that we can learn as people, or is that something that we're just naturally born with?
Oh my goodness. Absolutely learn. Absolutely learn. I'm talking from my own personal experience here. I thought I was empathetic enough, but when I look back in history, I was a douche. I was not aware, honestly. I think education, not only education helps, but to really be frank with oneself. And actually, that's not easy. That's really not easy. To be absolutely brutally honest with oneself. The reason why I bring this up, because when we're honest about whatever comes our way, challenges or experiences, and if we know how to deal with it, okay, we'll go ahead and do what I can. If I don't know, I reached out to someone to try and help me, maybe a friend, maybe a therapist, maybe a doctor, maybe a professional, maybe a coach, maybe a mentor. When I do that, which I did a lot of therapy, trust me, there's a lot of therapy. When we reach out to professionals or other people who have skills that we don't have, and we actually have an open mind and heart to what they are sharing. We take this information in and we evolve. And yes, I used to feel a certain way, or I used to behave a certain way 5, 10 years ago. I look at my past self, and I'm sure my past self is proud of me of how far I made it. Now, if I was to meet someone and I'm able to perceive their struggle, if I'm familiar with it, I've gone through it, I can go like, you know what? I can understand what you're going through. I'm sure we can do something about it together. And it's not everyone says, let's do something about it together. They're healthy together. Not everyone knows exactly. Hence, I seek professionals often, you know. Just having the experience of, because honestly, they're like two common, many things that are common amongst us human beings, many, many things. But two of them is breathing. If we don't breathe for 2 minutes, we're gone. It doesn't matter who you are. 2 minutes, no air. You're gone. Well, unless you can hold your breath for 15 minutes, that's professionals. And the second thing is struggle and pain and like to grow in this environment as a human. No one had perfect parents. No one has the perfect environment. It's just, it's the perfect order of randomness, I like to call it. So if I've gone through a struggle and I made peace with it and I transitioned out of that, as a better carved version of myself, I am able to see that with others, and I welcome them to jump on my train, or even me jump on their train, however they like to do it, and like take them by the hand, or maybe not even hold hands, just talk about it, and just like moving forward. This is, obviously you mentioned Brené Brown, so we both are familiar with the difference between empathy and sympathy, you know, the person who gets in the pit and go like, you know what? I know how to get out of this hole. Let's do this together. Honestly, I only had very few people in my life who could do that. So it's actually a skill that's in scarcity. To really, some people trying to help without really understanding what the person is going through. And hence, active listening is crucial in the process. Active listening means we either ask the question or we just show up. And you are a role model of active listening, by the way. You're doing great listening right now.
Just, well, thank you.
Absolutely. So we show up. If we need to listen, we just listen. If we ask a question, we follow the question by a pause and just listen. And this listening by itself is empathetic enough with someone. Why? What makes me say that? I do truly believe that we all have a very special intelligence within us. There is a reason why when you go to a therapist, okay, the session is 50 minutes, they listen to you for 45 minutes, and the last 5 minutes, they tell you how much is the total for today. You know, they just listen. Unless you ask them a direct question, they just listen to you, because when we listen to ourselves speaking, we become more aware of this intelligence within. So part of being empathetic to someone, to actually just be there with them and be with them while they're trying to figure it out, that is one of the best things that we can do. If we ask direct question or if we ask for advice, then we can jump in. Otherwise, just, yeah. Being there and listening to someone and being there physically with them is one of the most empathetic things that we can do with others.
I love that you mentioned that. As I'm a certified life coach, and when I was doing that training, one of the main things that they mentioned was just how everybody has the answers to their own problems within themselves already. So it really is about just asking those right questions to help them get down to that answer, and not assuming that, you know, I know the right answer for somebody, because I'm not them. I'm never going to understand what their experience is fully.
Absolutely. I love that you bring this up. So there's actually a project that I'm working on that I'm recording in Egypt in April and June. And one of the topics that we're recording on is asking empowering questions. To ask questions to add value. Not only that, to also have the courage to ask the question from either sides, to have the courage to ask the question, make sure the question is empowering and adds value. We often, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this often, it's just a subconscious behavior. Sometimes we disempower each other by a question like, why do you think this will work? What? Why would you say that? Well, like, what? Okay, you tried this before, it didn't work. Why do you think it's going to work this time? Why are you even thinking about this right now? That's not very helpful. Why are you even thinking about this right now? Asking empowering, mindful questions that add value, as you just mentioned, and listen afterwards. You know what? What you just said reminds me of a joke. Do you know how? Can I tell you a joke?
Yes, please.
Life is a joke. that's not a joke, I promise you. How can a social worker, you probably know since you're like life coach, you probably know the joke, but how many social workers does it take for one patient to change their ways?
How many?
Come on, you don't know the answer? No.
Tell me the answer.
It only takes one. Just the patient needs to be willing to change. That's all. I don't even know whether it's funny, but it's supposed to be a joke. Maybe the way I said it. But anyway, our willingness really impacts how things will evolve when it comes to when we go through a struggle at trying to figure out a specific aspect of our life. So, yeah, communication.
So you touched on asking empowering questions, and this kind of leads me into the topic of, you know, management structure within businesses, because I find that a lot of the issues that we face with management is that they don't know how to properly and effectively ask questions and communicate with their employees. Do you have a type of framework that management can use to, you know, be assertive and have that courage to ask the hard things?
Absolutely. I'm actually standing while I'm talking to you, not like relaxed like you are, because I get too excited about those topics and questions. I cannot contain it. If I sit down, I'll get up after 2 minutes. I have a lot of energy. I'm really grateful. Yes. So quick background, truly blessed, and I'm really grateful as I'm sharing this. Between the year 2000 to the 2017, 17 years, I've had more than 12 different jobs, worked in 3 different corporations. I served in the military. I even worked in a restaurant 25 years ago. Every single job I have ever held and every position, I have excelled and promoted rapidly more than anyone else on my peers. Okay, what's up? Why are you bragging about this? Because I start working at a really young age with my parents in a supermarket store as young as 9 or 10 years old. Wow. Obviously, I mentioned to you that my mom was like, awesome with dealing with people, even though she didn't have much education. So I learned a lot from that, learning by osmosis. And I learned that human connection, when we build bridges, it can take us to places we cannot imagine. When we start building walls, well, we isolate ourselves. One of the key factors that really helps the connection between the management and, I don't know if I can use those terms like for now, the management and like the staff members, actually so simple, yet it's really profound, especially that you mentioned business, management, growth, revenue, those, all these terms will come up. It is so simple, yet it's really profound. I have to bring it up. Communicating and connecting with every member of the team on the human level. On the human level. Let me share that example with you. A couple of days ago, I had a podcast with a motor vehicle dealership. Really. The owner of the podcast, he actually owns a dealership and he talks about cars, but he connected with me because he wanted to learn about communication. How can he communicate better with the staff? He said he has like, he said like 30 people and he just wants to know how to handle that. And I was like, 30 people is actually a pretty good number. It's not hundreds of people. So 30 people, we can deal with it. It is important to specify a period of time, at least once or twice a month, with each person for 10 to 15 minutes to talk about something outside of work. The thing is, when people think of management, you are not really, yes, you're managing people. Yes, you're managing the project. Yes, there are goals to achieve, but you are also managing emotions. If you have one of the team members, team player, either distressed about their financial situation or some kind of argument at home or maybe transportation, there's a problem or their car got towed or whatever the issue is, or their debt or there's money problems, all this impacts us how productive in what we do. It's really, yeah. I believe in like, at some point I need to share with you my definition, my own coin definition of what communication is, because it's really important. It's really energy. The energy that we bring into whatever we do, you know, if in the kitchen, when someone cooks something, everyone cooks the same meal, but it tastes different. Mm-hmm. We put our energy, our breath in it. And that's in everything that we do. A deal, a paper that we sign, a contract, a goal that we set, our energy into it. So what I am suggesting, because most managers know about, you know, possibly maybe how to solve conflict or maybe what are the goals of the company, how to achieve them. All that is built on one important concept. You are dealing with humans. Please, no matter what, do not forget that's the case. And I know some things get tense and serious sometimes at work when we forget that. It's okay if it happens sometimes, but it doesn't need to happen oftentimes. Yes, they come to work, and yes, they put the time and hours and they get paid, but guess what? They're human just like you. And I really do believe, I think I should put this on every manager's door, the following quote. Every single human being is doing his and her best. Show them better and they will do better. But if we keep criticizing them for what they're doing as not effective, where is the solution? Oh, you know what? All right. So I'm actually borrowing this from my experience in the military. I'll never forget. 2007. Petty officer, second class. I cannot remember his name. But I do remember the incident. Basically, I made a list of the issues that I thought that we can fix. I was, at the time, I was ground maintenance airplane captain for jet fighters, F-A-A-T. And I went to my petty officer with like a list of four or five items that I feel like we need to fix around the shop. And he looked at me and looked at a list. I was like, wow, this is a really good list. Thanks for coming up with this list. Now, where are the solutions? I'm like, I came to you for solutions. Really? And he said, okay, that's fine. Next time you notice any problems and you want to discuss them, I would like for you to bring the issue and a suggested solution. How empowering that was. He did not tell me every single you have a problem, come and check in with me first. Before you make a decision, check in with me first. I am the boss. I'm the manager. He empowers me to think on my own. That is so beautiful. And I also remember another manager. His name is Jacob, long time ago. And I'm a problem solver. I like to find what's wrong and try and fix it. Oh, my God. Anyway, so again, we were in the office and I shared with him that there's some things that we need to fix around the restaurant. That was 25 years ago. And I still remember. And he basically looked at me and he said, wow, you're really observant about what's going on. This is great. I would like for you to choose your battles. You can't focus on everything all the time. You need to focus on the most important. So what I'm trying to bring up here is that every single word that comes out of the boss, the manager, the leader, has impact on their employees. Mm-hmm. Hence, we need to use, as we say, empowering and adding value questions, also use empowering words. What can we do about this now? If my boss would tell me, if you were in my place and you were the manager, how would you handle this situation? My boss would used to do this with me. If I come up with like some kind of issue in different position, different jobs, like when I worked at Bank of America, have I been lucky my entire life with amazing bosses? I guess I have been. Oh my God, just to realize
that. Man, you're
that.
One of the very few in the whole world, I would say.
Well, I guess I do choose really the jobs that I get involved into. So makes sense intentionally. The boss or the manager, they empower me by saying something like, if you were in my place and another employee came to you with this issue, how would you handle it? Please do not get me wrong. I had more than 12 different jobs. Some of them was not that great. I am bringing the cream of the crop. Okay, let's be real. Okay. Hence, you know, I change jobs every like a year or two because I'm an experience junkie. I love to learn. I love experiences. So the idea is leadership in a management position is not necessarily about the position. It's about the passion. And you can really tell from a leader who's doing their job just to get paid and go home, or the other ones who show up and subconsciously allow other people to show up to be more productive.
That's so beautifully put. And, you know, you're talking about empathy, you're talking about empowering questions. What else do management and just people in general need to effectively communicate? What are those other qualities that make an effective communicator?
So I think this is the perfect time to interject my definition of communication, because I think this is very, very important. When I do my workshops and I have, let's say, 30 people in one sitting, and I ask them, what is communication? I'm not going to put you on the spot. Don't worry. And I ask 30 people, what is communication? I get 30 different answers, and there are no wrong answers because we all see it differently. If you Google communication, you get a different answer. If you use dictionary, you will get a different answer. Hence, a privilege in a humble way, that my position as a researcher, that you get to the point where you coin your own definitions based on your experience and your depth of understanding. So now I'm about to share my coin definition of communication. It's a little convoluted, but I'll try and slow. So I see communication as a non-stop, voluntary, and involuntary process of exchanging information, knowledge, energy, and even vibration. Shaking hands and feeling someone's skin and temperature, that's communication. You're sitting here with me right now, and you're nodding your head and you're agreeing with me. It's communication. So with that being said, we say, how can I communicate with my manager, or how can I communicate with my staff members or team members, for example? I would prefer to ask, how can I create a conducive environment where we can communicate vulnerably and mindfully? Imagine if your boss, so human and so vulnerable with you, where they tell you, you know what? I really had a tough morning at home, the kids and all, but now I'm at work. Please help me to get through this. I'll transition slowly and we can go about the day. Oh my God. Oh my God. But no, many managers, you're supposed to like have this face on, mask on, to like nothing bothers me, nothing happened to me. But the more we show humanity, the more we get closer together. So being aware that my definition of communication that I share with you, that it's non-stop, it's happening all the time. When I say voluntary and involuntary, we communicate mindfully or it's happening on autopilot. And it's happening all the time. With my depth of understanding, not only studying communication, but also yoga and meditation, so kind of they all go together, we are basically walking around like an antenna, like receiving and sending energy all the time, all the time. So when we think communication is, you know, we say verbal and nonverbal. I also think beside nonverbal, you say just existing. Existing, it means communication. You exist, that's a communication.
Do you feel like, and I know you mentioned just being vulnerable and having that human connection when you're speaking with somebody. Do you feel like, especially within a management role, I know that a lot of managers have that issue with setting boundaries. And so, like you mentioned, they don't want to share some of that vulnerability because it's like, how much do I share? Do you find that you get the answer to that question the more that you are in touch with yourself? Or do you have any advice on setting boundaries within communication?
Well, we know setting boundaries is like the big topic for the last few years. And it's really, really important to know what that means, setting boundaries at work, or even at home, or even setting boundaries for our own selves. I decide the things that I cannot do because it's not good for me. It's not healthy. And I keep in the things that are really healthy that keep me, help me to grow. I really like your question because I have been in sales a lot. And it's not intentional. It was just a job, I promise you. And I have been really good at all the sales position. And I was really told by like two or three different people that I can sell anything. Sell anything. And I was thinking, if I go and work at a luxurious cars dealership, I can make really good money because it's human interaction. But then filling the pocket and filling the heart are two different things. And not many people are aware of that. Hence, I learned or I decided for myself, if I can sell anything, I can sell healthy information, empowering communication, something to help people to see things differently. Now, the reason why I bring this up, because when we talk about empathy, vulnerability, authenticity, you can't really use those things when you go to a car dealership. The car dealership is looking to make $2,000 or $3,000 from you when they sell you that car, so you cannot use that. So in the sales world, I find that pretty challenging concept to follow up with in terms of salesperson, for example, and customer. Now, when it comes to the salesperson and their leader or manager, I know as a fact when I start to become like more popular with my workshops, this will become very healthy. How managers and leaders see their team members or staff as checkered pieces to move to accomplish the task. Well, if that's how you see your staff, well, your staff will see you as someone who signs their paycheck. And if it wasn't for them, they get fired. It's a two-way street. It goes back and forth. Having those boundaries, I really think to have healthy boundaries, it takes strength and awareness. Some manager will take these boundaries like, they should not know about my personal life. I'm the boss. I'm just here to work. It's all about money. Everyone goes home and forget about work. And imagine if we create a boundary that also includes your staff member, where they actually cannot wait to come to work. Because maybe during lunchtime, they will have 10 minutes with you and tell you what happened at home or how was their weekend. Now, people who our boundaries tend to get smaller and smaller and smaller when we become more afraid, when we do not feel safe. And that's very important to be aware of. As a leader, we actually have the ability to establish this subculture at work. Conducive environment to be vulnerable, to grow, and as you mentioned, connecting human to another.
What would be the steps towards creating a better environment? So let's say you don't have a vulnerable work environment currently. How do you build that and foster that growth?
Absolutely. Have you had a job before when a new boss comes in and just like starts everything over?
Yes, I have.
We're not doing this anymore. This is what we're doing. And people like, leave work and come the next day, it was like everything has changed, like the offices, the rules, the time, that this change is driven by ego. Mindfully and carefully, I want to use this term democracy. I really think it's very important. We can bring this actually to work where we ask people their opinion, just what you asked me right now. I will take this question from you. I will give it to the leader and I tell the leader, take this question and ask your staff member, how can we create a conducive environment that will help you to show up and not hide? How can we create a conducive environment that will let you know that you are being treated as a human, not just an employee, not just a number? How can we do that? Because honestly, let's be frank, every work environment is different. I would love to give you steps 1, 2, 3, like maybe listening, cultivate time to spend one-on-one with the coworkers, create a reward system at the end of the week or the end of the month, or create employee of the week or employee of the month, something to motivate people, or maybe create a confession session with your leader. like every few days or once a month. It is very important. I really do not think there's a blueprint to this because every work environment is different. And I mean this from my heart because I've been to so many different jobs and I can tell you, working in a restaurant is different than a factory, different corporation, different corporations. Expedia was different than Bank of America. They were different in so many ways. So the manager, the leader, is able to cultivate a subculture part in at work by asking the staff and the individual what works for them. Everything they ask for will happen? Absolutely not. But to give them the voice to know that they're participating, they're part of the stock of making the decision is really, really important. So creating this open channels with the staff and the team, ask them for their feedback, and also create a safe environment where they can give constructive feedback to one another. Imagine if the boss comes to you and like after a meeting one-on-one and go like, hey, how do you think about this meeting? Did I say something to upset you? Oh my God, you're going to get up and want to hug the guy, right? Like, right? Simple, yet very powerful. So being tuned in, being conscious of what we are creating every single day with every conversation, that's how we're creating the environment collectively. The boss or the manager, it doesn't mean you're up there and you're just leading. That's, I don't want to mention president's name here, but the point is just be mindful of the subculture that we are creating at work is very crucial. And we cannot just think whatever, however we want to run things. It's not the only way. It's not the right way for everyone. We need to have inputs from other people. And that creates a more valuable experience for everyone involved.
So it sounds like co-creation within the work environment is key to having a fostered community feel within work. That kind of leads me to my next point on just transparency and how important that is between leadership and employees as well. Do you have any tips on creating a culture of transparency without overwhelming employees with unnecessary information?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. For some employees, some individuals, it is really easy for them to get overwhelmed with information. It makes so much sense. I don't necessarily believe in like you find out based on a need to know basis. That's very military. Do not use this in real life. Transparency between the management and the staff. What does that mean? Transparency in what? Transparency in personal experiences, in progress, in achieving goals, how we're achieving the goals, and avoid, oh, this is really important. This is really important. For the sake of time, I'll try to be concise. It's very crucial and critical to be aware that assertive communication does not turn into manipulation. So when we talk about transparency at work, that's actually a very sensitive term to use because when we bring this up, we talk on like on the personal level at work, or you mean in terms of like achieving goals? Because I love the word transparency. Why? Because when we have something that's kind of hiding, it gets heavier with time. It gets heavier and heavier and heavier with time. So in terms of transparency, there are different dimensions in based on your position. I really do believe, and I have experienced managers and leaders who lead by passion, not by position. They have an innate ability to be transparent at work in a healthy way. And again, doing that with members of the staff encourages the staff as well to be transparent with them. Can I tell you about a word that I invented like 10 years ago?
Yes, I would love to hear it.
The
I
word?
Love inventing words.
You do? Okay. I think I just... Okay, I'll tell you about the word that I invented first. The word is groblem.
Groblem. What does that mean?
Are you ready?
Yes.
Good problem. Good problem, Graf. I can't believe I admit, I swear, like 10 years ago, and I go around and telling everyone about it, and everyone gives me that weird look. So I was like, I love the word. I don't care what you think. We have a problem. How are we going to tackle this one?
There's that.
Yeah, there's a challenge. There's a problem. I mean, that's actually what I tell. I only have like 3 people working with me, but this is the term that I use. We actually have, sometimes I say problem, sometimes I say challenge. There's no issue. There's no problem. If there's an obstacle, let's find a way. Open the door, or even, oh. What I love about intentional communication, you know when people say communication opens many doors? If you have a sufficient depth of experience and knowledge in communication, you will realize that communication does not only open doors, communication can create the door.
Ooh. How does it create the door?
Being aware of what we're doing, actually, whatever's coming our way, to go with the flow. Let's say you are trying to share with me an idea or a concept or something that happened with you, and I am aware of where you're coming from. I'll give you a really good example. I have a good example. Can you give me an example? So one of the questions that I posted on TikTok, and it was like a big deal. Before you get into a relationship or go out on a date or any romantic relationship, you ask the following questions. Are you healing? Are you healed? Or you don't know what I'm talking about? What that means, we are trying to figure out from which angle we approach the person and character. Where they at? So when we able to sense and interpret where the person is coming from, and instead of looking for, oh, how do I get through this obstacle? How do I dance around the issue they're bringing up? I can actually figure out a way that I can penetrate the situation by creating an opening, a door, intentionally, by really processing what's coming our way and respond to it in a flowing way, instead of keep forcing things. Why? Something that we often do, we're not aware of, and obviously you're not doing it, but where we force our beliefs on other people, instead of seeing where they're coming from and approach it from that angle, instead of trying to convince them with something that they already resisted to, well, let's create a different opening, different angle. Hence, we need to see where people are coming from. That's what I mean by actually creating the door. Not to look for a way to, not look for a typical way to approach a specific situation, but think creatively. Like you said, co-creating in the environment. We are co-creators, absolutely, to create that opportunity. And obviously, let's be clear, let's be honest, not everyone is open for such interaction or experience. Hence, we need to be mindful. We may not be able to create the doors all the time. Sometimes the wall is made out of steel. Oh, I need to tell you about my professor, Professor Pope, 15 years ago. She gave me this amazing example I love to share. At the end of our class, right before before finals, she liked to use podium to teach the class. We're only like 20 students. She looked at us and she said, I want you to know, no matter how much you study, how you choose your words carefully, how you craft your sentences, how much you be mindful and careful of how you connect and trying to get through to someone. And she turned to the left and she ran into a wall, for real. I will never forget that. Just to show us, no matter how much you try, some people we cannot get through. Yeah. We have to accept the fact.
Love that you bring up, you know, just how people come from different cultures and backgrounds, and, you know, to not pass your judgment on to people or your beliefs about certain things. And especially within the work environment now, where we want to have people feel, you know, that sense of comfort that they can come to us and have these open conversations. Do you have any tips on or advice on just again, creating that type of environment for lots of different cultures and lots of different backgrounds coming together and making it feel like it's inclusive.
On the biggest scale that I can think of, and I've been thinking about this for years, I want to give you two different answers, the big scale, the smaller scale. The big scale is, are you familiar with HR?
Yes.
What does it mean, HR?
Human resources.
That term is really disheartening to me.
It
because
is.
Because it's supposed to be a human being, not a human resource.
Mm.
Again, it goes back to when we first started talking a few minutes ago, the human connection. Planting that seed alone, even though I'm so grateful for your genuine response to that, human resource versus human being, it's so simple, yet it is profound. These simple terms can change the entire work environment. Obviously, I'm not going to be able to make that change. Who knows? Maybe one day I'll make a big speech to Congress and change from human resource to human beings who are awesome or something like that. It's something more creative. Again, the base of it is being a human and realizing that's another part to it. Especially, I know you're talking about professional, yet I want to keep it more general relationships, whether impersonal or professional. Being aware that most of the time we do not see how things are, we see them as how we are at work. That's really, really important. I can see my boss arguing with one of the co-workers, for example, having conversation office. It's a glass. I can see the office, but I cannot hear. And I can assume what's going on in there. I don't know anything, but I can assume. The brain, the mind is the greatest storyteller in existence. We need to be aware of that and filter out of that. Again, that falls under like communicating and connecting consciously on the human level. This planting that seed of human being, that one human dealing one to the other, in any culture will bring up a different light on the type of relationships that we're building. Because at work, it's relationship between coworkers, between the manager, between the managers and coworkers. It's all about relationships. And some people call it relationships, but we're going to call it relationships here. To be aware of how we're cultivating this relationship, one human to another, regardless to the work or the job or career that we're in, with exceptions of car dealership, when we realize that we are doing our best and everyone else around us is doing their best, it will be like a whole new world to see everything else.
And how about on a smaller scale?
I've been thinking about this. On a smaller scale, it's going to have to start with the intro. How are we doing this with ourselves? Do you know that it's actually not that easy to be honest and frank with ourselves?
It is hard. Because it's like you have to admit that you sometimes are wrong. And I think a lot of people struggle with that. When you're honest with yourself, or even if you want something, being honest with what you want, feeling like maybe you don't deserve that.
Thank you for saying this. And I'm going to piggyback on that and tell you, at work, at any job, when we mindfully and intentionally share our imperfections and flaws, that actually brings us together and creates more cohesive environment. I messed this up, or I made the wrong decision. Oof. I am past the due date, or I don't think this project, I can do it only alone. I need someone else to help me. Oh, I cannot stay late an hour to actually have other plans, you know, because, I don't know, my car crashed or something. Just being really authentic about what is happening with us. Actually, when I say what's being authentic, what's happening with us, it's not just about what's happening outside of work or at work, but what's happening within. That's actually... So maybe every single job, they need their own therapist. Maybe that should be the answer. To figure it out together. Because when you put different personalities under the same roof and they have one goal to achieve, whether it's growth, revenue, or marketing. This becomes the North Star of the whole group. And if we're not aware, we actually forget our own identity in the process. Having a leader who is aware of that, to keep the happy medium or balance between, let's keep our eyes on the North Star. In the meantime, I don't want you to forget your own identity as you are on that path, to encourage you to be who you really are as you are part of the team to achieve a goal. This is very natural human innate desire to be identified with something. You know, people like around the world, oh, I'm American. That's a really good idea. Yeah. Oh, I work for Expedia. Oh, I work for Google. Ooh, you know, identity. Yes, there's a sense of pride of that. In the meantime, studying sociology was really helpful at this point. In the meantime, encourage people not to forget their own identity and treat them as such, like maybe a father, maybe a husband, maybe a wife, maybe a mother, maybe a daughter, maybe a partner. Just goes back again to treat other humans with empathy and compassion and not forget that they have their own lives and their own identity as they're being part of something that's being created at work as well, professionally.
Absolutely. Mario, this has been so insightful, and I know that you have just such incredible wisdom about this topic, and I've felt your passion for communication this entire time that we've been talking. Where can people find you if they want to take one of your workshops or work with you? I know that you do public speaking as well, but where can we find you?
I have this amazing website that I'm really proud of. It's not my work. It's my team that put it together. It's my first name and last name. So mariowissa.com, MarioWissa.com. And we've been working on this website for the last like maybe 5 months, and we keep adding and updating it. And it's an amazing journey. And there are actually a couple of fun things to do on the website. One, you can take free assessment tests, only 15 questions you take online to kind of assess your personality type when it comes to communication, communication style. And number two, you have the option to, for our awesome listeners, to book 30-minute free session 101 to work on anything that's related in your life to communication, your career. Possibly looking to change jobs. Let's figure out what really drives you, what intrigues you, what gives you the spark in your heart, and any other relationships in your life. It's all based on communication. Let's work on it together. And yeah, I want to do good in this life before I take off. So that simple.
Amazing. Well, I will be sure to link your website in the show notes for all of our listeners to take a look at that. So there's one question that I have for you. This is the final question, and it's something that I like to ask all of my guests that come on the show, and it's one of those Mad Lib fill-in-the-blank questions. So the question is, you have to blank to blank.
You have to be mindful of the have-tos you use on yourself to grow and explore your unlimited potentials.
So beautifully said. So beautiful. Mario, it has been such a joy having you on the show. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for making this happen.
Thank you so much for listening. If you found value in today's conversation, make sure to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. And as always, don't forget to share this episode with anyone that you think could benefit. And for more information about today's guest, be sure to check out the show notes. We'll see you next time.